This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
All right, everybody, we are live on YouTube and Twitter. I'm waiting for Paul Dennett to turn up, but he'll be here very shortly. So I thought this would be a good time for people to join the stream and join me and Paul soon talking cricket. I've just retweeted it. I would say the best place to watch these live shows is on YouTube. If you subscribe to our YouTube channel, then you get to you get notified whenever we go live, unlike when you're, say, watching on Twitter where you're sort of scrolling. YouTube's probably a better experience. So if you are thinking of keeping an eye on all these broadcasts, go to our YouTube page. The links are on our Twitter pages and in the show notes. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We're here to talk about the big performance last night from Australia, beating Sri Lanka by 7 wickets in their second T20 World Cup game. It was a much more convincing performance than their first game against South Africa. They struggled to run down the target in the first game, but they cruised to victory against Sri Lanka after being set 155 to win. They got there with 18 balls to spare and with 7 wickets in hand. So gives their net run rate a boost. I guess let's start with the Australian team. They made no changes from the first match. So they're sticking with their seven batters, basically, with Matthew Wade keeping and playing at 7. And then they've got the 3 quick bowlers and 1 spinner of Adam Zampa. And Sri Lanka batted first. Did they win the toss? So Australia won the toss. Hello, Jose. I don't know where Paul is, and hopefully he'll show up at some time. I've got some big news for him. Anyway, Australia won the toss. They sent Sri Lanka in, and Sri Lanka got off to a good start. They were smashing the ball all around, and they looked like they were going to send a big total. But then Adam Zampa came in and bowled an excellent spell. His 4 overs just went for 12 runs. And he took 2 wickets. And that put the brakes on Sri Lanka. They got off to a good start because Sri Lanka. Here's Paul Dennett. Paul, welcome.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can. A miracle. I didn't realize when you said 2 o'clock, you're going to go literally live. That's very prompt of you. Sorry, I'm late.
Well, you know, I like to keep the fans happy. I've just been warming people up, retweeting the broadcast and telling people where they can listen. So you came at the perfect time. I was just saying Sri Lanka got off to a fast start with Sri Lanka, but Zampa then really sort of pulled them back, and that was a vital spell.
Wonderful spell. Stark Yorker was pretty impressive as well. And from that moment on, it was pretty clear that it was only going to be a mediocre total, but they improved a little bit towards the end as well, Sri Lanka.
Yeah, they did. And they sort of scrapped to 154. Again, excellent bowling by Stark and Hazelwood. The only element that was exposed was the sort of fifth bowler. They really went after Maxwell and Stoinis.
Yeah, and I've seen an article today saying this, you know, the problem for Australia's fifth bowler. I think this is very much a recency bias sort of thing. Like, from time to time, this happens. To suddenly say that based on the evidence of this one match only, Glenn Maxwell is not a reliable fifth bowler when he only got one over. And I don't know why they bowled him in the power play. Just if I was a Sri Lankan batsman and you said, oh, we're going to take the quicks off and bring on Maxwell right now, I'd have been pretty happy. They're much more accustomed to accomplished against spin. So I thought it was the wrong thing to give him a bowl in the power play this time.
Yeah, they certainly did take him up one over for 16 for Maxwell and Stoinis three overs for 35. I guess they do have the other option of Mitch Marsh. He could bowl a few overs. But I agree with you. I think it's something they have to accept. It's often the tactic in any limited overs game that you target the fifth bowler. So there's no surprises they're doing this. It's a shame we can't squeeze a really good second spinner in there. We've got Stephen Matlock here saying, when Swepson getting a run, you know, if they could squeeze him in, that'd be great, but it'd definitely shorten the batting.
Yeah, I suppose Agar, you know, his batting's okay. Swepson's not the worst either, but yeah, you're right. One other thing I thought was interesting was when I was watching, and I was really disappointed when he brought Stoinis on to bowl, what was it, the fourth last over, because I think Finch was thinking, right, I've almost got my sums done perfectly, but I've got one extra over that I have to squeeze in. That what they should have done was say that should be the 20th over, because they belted that fourth last over from Stoinis. Had they gone straight to Stark and Hazelwood, then they might not have had a 20th over. I think that's a mistake that captains sometimes make of, let's see if we can just squeeze it in rather than going for the jugular. And you know, by the time of the 20th over, most bowlers are going to get pumped anyway.
That's true. And sometimes when you squeeze in a bowler like a part-time bowler, it just gives the batters a little bit of time to sort of get settled. They might get a bit of confidence. So you're right. It's a tough one for skippers. Just to note, there's a few questions coming through and comments. We'll get to them at the end of the broadcast. I think the best thing is to do is to sort of through our wrap up, then we'll go through all the comments. Otherwise, I end up just reading the whole time and not really concentrating. Before we go on, congratulations, Paul. Cricket Daily is a finalist in the Australian Podcast Awards. I did send you a message, but I thought I'd tell you the news live.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. That's fantastic. It's really, really nice to see. Yeah, I'm quite speechless. So, yeah, congratulations to you. So, you know, this is great.
Absolutely. And thanks to all the contributors to it. All right, so let's continue. Australia bowled well. Mitchell Stark, 2 for 27 off four overs. Hazelwood, none for 26 off four overs. Pat Cummins, 2 for 34. So another good all-round bowling performance. Sri Lanka restricted to 6 for 154. Were you nervous at the halfway break that total might be a little bit out of reach for the Aussies?
I thought we'd win, but I certainly had a little bit of nerves. Even when the opening partnership started so well, I thought, I have seen situations like this where we can go from cruising to suddenly, if the middle order is exposed to quality spin and the wicket starts doing a bit, that it can unravel very, very quickly. So I think it was a boundary that Stoinis hit towards the end and made Justin Langer smile, where the run rate dropped to about 4 or 5 and over needed, and we... At that point, when we did about 20 off 25, that was the only time I completely felt comfortable. That's, shows what we've had in the past sometimes.
Yeah, I sort of, you know me, I'm not particularly confident on this side, but at the halfway mark in Australia's innings where they just needed 60 off 60, I was very confident from there with the great Steve Smith there to knock it around that would bring the show home. So let's start at the top of the order, because I think it was such a welcome relief to everybody, the selectors of the Australian cricket team, the fans, the captain, the fact that Finch got off to a rocketing start with 37 of 23 deliveries, 5 fours and 2 sixes. And Finch actually took a bit of pressure off Warner early. He sort of opened the shoulders, and Warner 65 of 42. But those two, I think, scored over 60 in the power play, which is the most expensive power play so far in the tournament. So that was, you know, a real boost.
It certainly was. And as the cliche goes, it's a game of small margins. That one where Finch was given not out LBW early on. When it hit him, I thought, I wouldn't give that out, but I don't think the umpire will. but geez, he might. That's quite a lot of things to think about in 1 second, I suppose. But when they showed the replay and it was umpire's call, had he given it out, that would have been the end. And we might be having a very different conversation today.
Yeah, and there was also the bit of luck for David Warner where Chimera found his glove down leg side and Pereira, the keeper, dropped a bit of a dolly. It kind of ballooned to him. And that sort of was sort of the luck Warner needed. From there, he never looked back.
It just exemplifies the difference between the sides. The Australian fielding was superb. The Australian fielding side is the best side in the world by a million miles. That every time Jadeja fields well and they say, oh, he's a great fielder, I reckon if Jadeja was in the Australian field, in the Australian side, he'd be just an average fielder, a good, average, solid fielder. They are all amazing. And the performance in the field was brilliant. Compare that to what we just described. Even before that, Finch hit a cut shot that was misfielded on the boundary, gifted Australia a four. The best thing about that caught behind was that the bowler was so certain that the keeper was going to catch it, he started celebrating. And the umpire had actually half raised his finger to give it out until they both then realized, oh my God, he's dropped that.
Yeah, well, poor bowler. And look, that those little things, they often say it, but can just, you know, that little extra chance that Warner gets, you know, he goes on to make 65, 10 boundaries, you know, that could turn his career around. I remember when Justin Langer was about test to say player that. And he was facing
with
any Mark show about
334.
Yes, and he was plumb, middle stump. He goes on to make 100 and never looks back.
I was going to say that. I thought I better not say that. Menes will be annoyed at me for bringing up irrelevant history.
We're like two peas in a pod sometimes. Shoaib Akhtar's been in the news. I think we'll touch on that before we finish this broadcast.
Yep.
And then from there, look, Glenn Maxwell came out. He made 5 off 6. I think they wanted to try and boost the net run rate. Didn't work out that time. Steve Smith, his normal strike rate of 107.
Don't be insulting. Don't be insulting.
I'm just saying, just making a point that's about his, you know, he's sticking to his form, 28 not out of 26 balls. Marcus Stoinis, 16 not out. What? Steve Smith, sorry. Steve Smith.
Maxwell is just about my favourite player, but I thought it was a very poor shot that he played. I understand the notion of sending someone out to try to boost the net run rate, but don't take the game for granted. They should have sent Mitchell Stark out. I know everyone would have laughed, you know, but send someone out who wasn't going to get a bat anyway. At the time that Maxwell got out, I thought, oh, this could open the door to that dreaded middle order collapse. And then Steve Smith walked out and I thought, everything's going to be okay. And it was. So don't insult Steve Smith.
I'm not insulting him. He's just playing form, struck rate of 107. And then Marcus Stoinis, struck rate of 228.57, 16 not out. Australia gets there with 3 overs to spare. So a little bit of a boost for their net run rate. I sort of thought that Sri Lanka's bowling, to me, just looks a bit thin in the middle overs. They just don't seem to be able to exert much control. And I can't see them challenging many teams going forward.
Well, they've kind of done better than expected in some ways. Before the tournament, there was even talk that they might not get out of their qualifying group. So I think they made a mistake not just going in with an all-spin attack against Australia, that Australia lap up fast bowling and that was probably their best chance of winning. But, yeah, I think Australia looked pretty good. It was a thoroughly entertaining and enjoyable experience for an Australian fan and a comforting experience for a change.
Absolutely. And it set up the clash on Saturday night between England and Australia to be an absolute humdinger. So both teams now are on top of Group 1 with 2 wins. Then you've got South Africa and Sri Lanka behind them on 1 win each. And then Bangladesh and the Windies yet to get a win from their 2 games. So if whoever wins between England or Australia, that will be a significant step to making into the semi-finals. You know, the winner of that game, I would say it's a huge advantage going forward. And yeah, I think it's going to be a great game.
I agree. I can't wait for it. But I think at this time, it might give you an opportunity to all of the regular listeners of Cricket Unfiltered to make your apologies that you said that Australia would be better off just keeping their players at home and playing Sheffield Shield at the moment. And there's no point even sending the side over there. I've just gone onto the fantasy that there's a site where you can predict what was going to happen and they'll update the table for you. Here's what happens if I assume Australia loses to England and loses to West Indies and that Australia's only favourable result in the rest of the group stage is beating Bangladesh. Every other game, I just put in who I think would be favourite, so I try to get a fairly standard response, Australia still qualifies. Australia can lose those two games, they'll probably still qualify for the semifinals. In second place, may well play Pakistan, if that was the way that it was going to eventuate. So from here, it would have to be a disaster for Australia not to make the semifinals. So, you know, if it was up to you, you would say no to us being basically two big games away from winning the World Cup.
You're way more confident than I am. I'm not even sure we'll beat Bangladesh. They gave us a real touch-up when we played them recently. But look, I will apologise, I guess, not unreservedly, because Australia haven't won anything yet. But they've started better than I expected. But I still see some major holes in the Australian lineup, and I think they'll get found out eventually. And they've been such an awful tease, the Australian T20 side. They get on a roll and you think they're going to do well, and then they just crash out. I remember the 2010 T20 World Cup final against England. Just a terrible performance. So I am scarred. But I just still think we're lacking that second spinner, and there's no way to fix it. And I don't know if Zampa matches up to some of the other spinners, like Adil Rashid for England. I think he outmatches Zampa.
I think he's a better bowler, but I think Zampa, at his best, Zampa is fantastic, as they all are. I think that maybe Rashid and Rashid Khan and some of the other absolute top ones have more days where they dominate, but gosh, you can't do much more than what Zampa did today, than last night.
Oh,
they were starting. Yeah. That was a powerful performance. And Stark was he still gets hit around a little bit because the ball just flies at his pace. But that Yorker that he delivered after he got hit for six was particularly impressive as well.
Excellent. Well, good performance. Can't wait for Saturday night or Sunday morning Australian time for the taking on the old enemy. A bit of an Ashes warm up. Two big games tonight.
A couple of other quick notes that I made just of random stuff that I wanted to bring up. First of all, how good was Warner's reverse sweep when he was on one? Talk about bravery. If he got out playing that shot, the headlines would have been all over the shop. I looked up the laws last night. Did you see where the Sri Lankan fielder fielded it and his hat fell on the ball?
No.
I wonder whether that's five runs. They didn't comment, but if anyone did notice it, I checked the laws that that's okay. If it's accidental, it's not five runs. So that's I'm sure something that's been worrying a lot of our listeners. How good is the music between the overs? They got like a 90s party anthem. They had Peter Andre playing. I really enjoyed that. And once again, someone's going to get killed sometime soon. That straight drive from Warner that you see Glenn Maxwell's reaction when he was like, yes. The bowler almost got hit there. And one other thing, there was a bit of social media talk about a fielding stop from Cummins on the boundary where he slid, tried to save it, missed it, and then swatted at the boundary rope. It's gone around virally of these people saying, oh, that's a typical Australian cheater trying to actually push the boundary rope back to stop the ball from going for four that way. I just like to say, anyone who thinks that is clearly insane. That is not, there's no way that that's what he was trying to do. I criticize the Aussies whenever they need to be criticized, but that was idiotic that was going around. It really annoyed me. I was fired up and I was about to start firing off tweets and decided better not go to bed. And I woke up in the morning, I was a bit calmer, but I just wanted to sort of vent my spleen just there about that.
Good. Get it out. Two big games tonight in the T20 World Cup, Bangladesh v West Indies, both yet to get a win. So, must win for one of those sides. You'd expect the Windies to get up, but no guarantees. And then the second game, I cannot wait for this one, Afghanistan versus Pakistan. Mm. I think this is going to be a humdinger. Two sides that play a brand of T20 cricket that is crash, bang, wallop. We'll smack the ball 100 metres. We'll spin the ball as far as we can and we'll give it a crack. This is must stay up for TV.
Yeah, it could be the most entertaining game of the entire tournament. I can't wait for it. And, two sides that are... they've got a bit of a burgeoning rivalry as well. So it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah. And I love watching Afghanistan play because remember when Warne used to come on and there was that buzz about, what's he going to do? I think there is that little bit of magic around some of the Afghanistani spinners, Mujibur Rahman and Rashid Khan. They just bring something to game that really brings it to life. Muhammad
sure.
Nabi. I mean, it's just a great team. So be watching that one. And then tomorrow night, South Africa, Sri Lanka, and then into the Australia-England game. Well, what have you made since our last full episode of the Cricket Unfiltered podcast? There's been a huge controversy around Quinton de Kock refusing to take a knee before the game, South Africa, two nights ago. And then he's since issued a sort of unreserved apology and he will be taking a knee now. What's your take on this whole issue?
I'm pleased that he's decided to take a knee. I think that Darren Sammy and Pommy and Bangwa's commentary just after it happened was quite telling. Both are people of colour and both were clearly, they didn't say it in so many words, but you could tell they were both hurt by the fact that he had made that decision. I think that's the key point. And I think anyone who looks at Michael Holding's brilliant monologue that he delivered during the cricket 18 months ago during the rain delay, if you haven't seen that, go to YouTube and type it in and look it up, because it's about 15 minutes. It's very well worth watching. And after that, I think you realise why it is so important that, you know, racism that has been around for hundreds of years or thousands of years and sadly is still right around today, and that the Black Lives Matter movement is so important that I get where people like Michael Vaughan are coming from when they say you shouldn't force someone to do something. But I just think in the grand scheme of things, if you listen to the way that those two commentators reacted, if you watch what Michael Holding said and you really understand what a massive issue it was, I think I would say that most people would say that it's the right thing to do. And so I'm really glad that he has now decided to do it. But it's been a very disappointing few days.
Yeah, you're right. And I echo your sentiments there that I'm really glad he apologised. It would have been so sad if Quinton de Kock was lost to international cricket because of this. So that's not the case. He wrote a very heartfelt letter explaining his feelings of it. And it seems a lot of it just boils down to the fact that Cricket South Africa sprung this on the team not long before a game. And I think he felt blindsided. But in the end, I sort of think whether you can have your own individual feelings, but if you're representing your country on a sporting field, doing this symbol to make it clear that you're striving for equality, I think is not too much to ask a player. It is not, it's not infringing on their rights as a human. It's like wearing a blazer in a team photo. Just, you know, you've got to show the right symbols. And I think it's such an important message that they're delivering. And I'm just glad it's been resolved like this, because I really thought that would be it for Quinton de Kock and he'd be playing T20 cricket around the world.
Yeah. And it'll be good to see the whole South African side taking a knee before next game.
I heard the most galling interview on SEN yesterday. Grant Elliott, the former Kiwi cricketer, but he's South African, was interviewed by Jared Waitley, and he made a series of bizarre comments. I really think Grant Elliott needs to go and get his head read and maybe broaden his horizons. He said things like, "I don't see colour, red flag." He said things like, "When Quinton de Kock was born, there was no apartheid, red flag." I mean, really, the yellow card, red card, off you go, Elliott. That was bizarre. So if you want to hear some strange stuff, find that online. South Africa, though, they've won one from two, so big victory for them when everything was against them. What did you think of – did you see Shoaib Akhtar walking off set in the Pakistan television? He was being on a panel show with David Gow, Viv Richards, and he quit on air.
Yeah, he's a lively character. I did see it, although I just got a surprise to see David Gower there, and I was really pleased to see that David Gower's got a job. And he spoke about it in his kind of usual urbane, understated way. But yeah, there's been quite a few things out of that India-Pakistan game which underline just how much it means to just how many people. And there's been some pretty bad takes along the way. But some, as I said in the Cricket Unfiltered the other day, the thing that was best out of that whole game was the embrace between Kohli and Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan after they had beaten India. I thought that was a lovely gesture from Kohli, and showed, without wanting to be too much of a cliche, about how cricket can be a force for good.
Absolutely. What was this Waqar Yunus controversy? I just glanced at something that he made a comment that was about religion or something. What do you know what happened?
Yeah, so Mohammad Rizwan, at some point, I think it was after the game, went on his knees and was praying. And Wacker made a comment to the effect of that it was a highlight seeing him performing that prayer in front of all the Hindus, or words to that effect. And Harsha Bogle, who's normally quite mild-mannered, really called him out on this and said that, you know, we're trying to see beyond religious differences and how disappointing it was, and that he expected that there'd be an apology coming from Wacker Yunus, and there duly was. So, yeah, another strange one.
Crazy few days in the T20 World Cup.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get back to talking about sixes and fours, and not that I think you can ever live in a bubble. And,
no,
you know, I think Jared Waitley actually puts it best that, you know, cricket is always a reflection of life. So, you know, if there's problems in the real world, they're going to be reflected in the cricket, and you just have to accept that.
Yep, absolutely.
All righty, Paul. Well, look, I think we'll leave it there for this edition. Anything else that you want to raise before we end this broadcast?
No, continues to be a really entertaining World Cup. I'm delighted that Australia are 2 from 2. We're really looking forward to the game against England. I think England definitely start as favourites. But as I said, not assuming that we're going to beat Bangladesh at all. We may not. But if we do lose to England and we do lose to West Indies, there is still every chance that we'll qualify for the semis. So Australia, at this stage, looking pretty good. Let's see how this
Australia! Yes! Hooray. We're going to win it. All righty. Well, Paul, let's try and do something after the England game on Sunday. At some point, we'll squeeze in a quick chat to review it. And thanks to everyone who's watched. Thanks to everybody that's listened, because I'm going to put this out on the Cricket Daily and Cricket Unfiltered feed. And we'll be back soon.
See ya.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch, or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.